In 2026, 3CR is celebrating 50 years on air.
Coming up is a podcast brought to you by the dedicated and diverse volunteers at 3CR. Just a quick message before you get there. For the month of June, we're asking listeners to donate to the station to help keep us going. We rely on the generous donations of the community to survive. Go to 3cr.org.au/donate and show your support for community-owned and community-run media. Thanks for your support and happy listening.
Slavery is back.
Welcome to a place where private business profit from a captive labour force, yet pennies are spent on medical services to a population in which the Indigenous, the poor and the mentally ill are overrepresented. Where isolation, humiliation and degradation are facts of life. Welcome to prison.
It depends who's telling the story, I suppose. The prisoners would have one view, the people who work in the prison system would have another, and I think it's up to people to decide where the truth is.
Give government propaganda and the media spin doctors the flick. And check out Doin' Time for news, views and tunes on prison issues from Guantanamo Bay to Christmas Island to prisons and detention centres everywhere. Every Monday at 4pm on your community radio 3CR.
We are still fired up and we're still talking about revolution.
Hello and welcome to the Doin' Time show. This is 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM on the dial, streaming live on www.3cr.org.au. And a warning that this episode of Doin' Time contains audio images of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people who have died, graphic discussion of deaths in custody, and massacres. This is Marissa, and I'll be with you for the next hour. On this week's show, we will first bring you an interview with Keith Munro. And Keith is the Aboriginal co-chair of the Friends of Mile Creek Committee, the organisation who led efforts to raise awareness of the Mile Creek Massacre. Seven men from the group who committed the murders were publicly hanged at Sydney Jail. They were the first colonial men executed for killing Aboriginal people. Then we will hear from Arif Hussain, senior lawyer at the Human Rights Law Centre, who will essentially speak about the Albanese government's rejection of the majority of major UN Human Rights Review's recommendations. The Albanese government has rejected most recommendations of a major UN Human Rights Review, including raising the age of criminal responsibility, legislating an Australian Human Rights Act, and policies which would improve the lives of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people and people seeking asylum. But first up, we will speak with Keith Munro, who comes from several lands, and he will tell us about those lands that he's from. And Keith has also done some wonderful art exhibitions as well. Each year, hundreds of people from across the country gather on the Sunday of the June long weekend to commemorate the unprovoked massacre of at least 28 Wirriwai women, children and old men by a group of stockmen on Mile Creek Station in June 1838. The Mile Creek Massacre Memorial on the Bukhara-Dilangra Road near Baringa was erected in June 2000 by a group of Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal people working together in an act of truth-telling and reconciliation. In 2007, the massacre site and memorial were included on the National Heritage Register and also received New South Wales State Heritage listing in 2010. I'd like to welcome Keith onto the program because I love his company. We've had him on for quite a few years in a row now. Cheerio out to Joe for organising this very special interview. Hello, Keith. Welcome.
Yeah, hello, Marissa. How are you?
I'm okay, considering that the gap hasn't been closed. There's just so much going on. But also, it's great that there's so many positives that have arisen from the Mile Creek massacre and all the memorials that have happened.
Yeah, that is true. And we're really proud of the work that the committee has been doing over the last 26 years to create a space where people can gather and reflect on that part of our history, I suppose. So, yeah, it's been an amazing achievement and something that we all very passionate about.
Absolutely. Can you tell us, in case new listeners have tuned in that don't know anything about First Nations communities and everything, can you just tell us what land you're from, Keith?
I'm a proud Gomeroi man from northwest New South Wales, southwest Queensland. And, yeah, I currently work in Sydney, though. I live and work in Sydney.
Perfect. So what's happening, you know, can you give us a little bit of a background of the massacre and also tell us a little bit about the memorial that happened this year?
Yeah, so on the 10th of June, 1838, there was a premeditated and unprovoked massacre that took place on Mole Creek Station. As you mentioned, at least 28 women, children and old men were massacred. From that initial trial of the 11 of the 12 convict, the next convict, Stockman, were trialled. Seven were rearrested after they were initially proven not guilty. Seven were rearrested and were retrialled and were subsequently found guilty and hung. And as you'd mentioned, on the June long weekend, it used to be the Queen's birthday long weekend. Obviously, now it's the King's birthday long weekend. We gather at the memorial site to reflect on that history, and people from local surrounds, but also from interstate and internationally, travel to attend the memorial and the other related events that take place over that long weekend.
And what do you think are the most important features of the memorial? What, as a descendant, you're a descendant, aren't you,
survivors?
The survivors. So, as a descendant, what do you think are the most important features that have happened from the memorials and the education?
Well, I mean, we've had, you know, some really important partnerships that we've developed over the years. So on the Friday leading up to the long weekend, we have a panel discussion that takes place with one of our partners, the University of New England, Orala Centre, that invites a panel of preeminent speakers to participate over a symposium. This year there was over 100 people that attended in person and online. And it was hosted by Tony McAvoy, SC, who is a worthy man from Central Queensland and Australia's first Indigenous Senior Council. So he was joined by a number of people on the day, including Professor Emerita Judy Atkinson, AM, Associate Professor Peter Smith from the University of New England's Faculty of Medicine and Health, Tracy Travers, who's a lecturer in nursing at the University of New England, Fiona Lovelock, who's an Aboriginal client and community support officer at Armidale Local Court, and Karen Conti, is a lecturer in children's law at the University of New England. They hosted a number of panels that covered, you know, various subjects from health and wellbeing, data sovereignty rights, Aboriginal people and interactions with the law, but also from Tony's perspective, the ripples of the effects of the massacre on law and its legacy. On the Saturday, there has been, over a number of years now, an exhibition that's been held out at the Ceramic Break Sculpture Park, which was attended by over 150 people. It included local artists and artisans. Then on the Sunday of the long weekend, obviously, we had around 350 to 400 people that gathered for the memorial at the memorial site. But this year, Marissa, we also had a group that had walked from the coast all the way to the Mile Creek site, travelling from the north coast. Took place over 12 days. Wow. That highlighted, I suppose, the massacre story of parts of that community that they were travelling through, and that was also quite an incredible achievement.
Tell us about that.
Well, it was undertaken over 12 days. I'm just trying to locate the name of the group. They travelled from, I think, around the Ballina area.
Fantastic.
And, yeah, stopped by and visited known local massacre sites.
Right.
To highlight the truth-telling of our history from a local person's perspective. The group gained some, really important local media attention and support from local communities to obviously highlight that truth-telling aspect of their journey, and timed it perfectly to arrive at the memorial site on the Sunday of the June long weekend on the 7th of June. So it was really great to be able to welcome them to the memorial. Anne Jarman and Jeff Reed, they walked from Lismore to Mile Creek. So that was quite an achievement. And obviously they had supporters that had gathered and supported them on their walk over that 12-day period. So
was that to highlight other massacres besides Mile Creek?
Yeah, that was to highlight just local massacres that were known in their local community as they walked country from Lismore across to Mile Creek. Yeah, so quite amazing, and truly incredible gift for the local communities to actually understand the local history of country, and to be able to bring to the broader attention, I suppose, I'd assume little known parts of our history whilst travelling through country, that hopefully create a conversation amongst people, and hopefully be able to understand in a bit more detail the stories that are important to local mob, how that's affected local mob, but also bringing that story to wider attention as well.
Look, it's pretty important to know about the massacres, and I think what really struck me was I saw, I think it might have been SBS, where they showed the memorial in the media one year, where you had Indigenous, non-Indigenous, and you had survivors of the massacre, such as yourself, and the survivors, the perpetrators, all getting together.
Yes.
That's powerful, that's isn't
great.
It?
That happens every year at the memorial.
Yeah.
So this year we had members, descendants of the perpetrators that hadn't attended the memorial before, that made themselves known, and also descendants of the survivors join in and embrace as part of the memorial to highlight our shared history, and I think creating a conversation around the potential of our country, when we were able to speak truth to our history and do that in a very personal way. It was amazing. I did have a conversation with a lady who had travelled up from Sydney to attend the memorial, and she came up and let me know just how amazing it was for her and her husband to travel up. It was the first time she'd attended the memorial, and she was quite overcome a bit emotional, just sort of seeing the very visceral aspects of the program, and to be able to sort of witness that and be involved in that and participate in that, I think was quite a significant thing for her to be involved in, and that's something that I'm really thankful of, not just for people that are able to travel, but also the large number of school kids that get to attend every year and participate in the program, but also in the student art competition that we hold as well, and announce the winners of every year at the completion of the memorial program. So, yeah, it is pretty special.
Very special. And just to touch on your earlier point, about, honouring all massacres, the Do and Time show does talk a lot about not just massacres, but everything in the context of colonisation. And it's really important, isn't it, that, as you say so many times, Keith, that we need people to remember the Mile Creek Massacre and all massacres and to create space for healing.
It is. I mean, our strength is in our ability to be able to shine a light on those difficult parts of our shared history. But to be able to do that with, respect, and to be able to do that with, a large amount of humility and, creating space for people to be able to, come together in a safe space where we are honouring, remembering and reflecting on some of the harder parts of our history. I mean, we love celebrating the great parts of our history, and for a lot of us, we see that whenever our national sporting teams, are on the international stage winning competitions. And the Olympics is probably the epitome of that. But I think what makes our nation greater is our ability to find space for us to be able to come together and acknowledge and reflect on some of the harder parts of our history and our story, which I think we should all be better at doing, given, we are 200-odd years into our shared history of this country. We have 65,000 years of ongoing story and tradition and culture that, from an international perspective, I think we are revered and admired internationally. I think there's a lot of potential for us to, become a bigger and better and greater nation when we can also reflect and be more respectful of some of the harder parts of our history.
Exactly. I mean, let's be honest here. Look, this was one of 438 sites where the mass killing of Aboriginal Australians took place during the period called the Frontier Wars between 1788 and 1930.
Yes, correct. And Mile Creek has a unique story in that, because obviously this was the first and only time non-Aboriginal people were arrested and tried in the court of law, and some were later convicted and sentenced to death. But unfortunately, that didn't stop the massacres. If anything, the massacres become more prevalent. And the way in which it was conducted was, a bit more, hidden, I suppose.
Yeah.
I mean, certainly in a large part, the story of these are hidden from the official view, but that those continue to be remembered and reflected through communities, through the stories that are expressed in, incredible contemporary artists, for example, but also reflected in some of the incredible theatre productions that have been created, that are highlighting some of those stories that have been shared with communities. That knowledge, I just admire the fact that it has survived that such a long and brutal history that has taken place throughout large parts of the country when it comes to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples.
It's very true. I mean, and the settlers were successfully prosecuted, weren't they, for the mass murders of Aboriginal people?
Yeah, well, Mike Creek is the only example where that was the case. But, yeah, as we know, you know, there were hundreds and hundreds, thousands upon untrialed massacres that had taken place throughout the country right up until, as you mentioned, the 1930s. So this is where I look at the achievements of the Mile Creek Memorial and, you know, the fact that we've been able to establish a memorial that, as national heritage listing and municipal heritage listing for not just the memorial site but also the massacre site, but also, you know, the local municipal education system has also now passed in the history syllabus for the Mile Creek Massacre to be mandated in the syllabus from next year. So that helps, I suppose, you know, students know more about that massacre story. And hopefully, you know, this is, you know, an opportunity for people to reflect on our shared history in a different way.
Keith, it's so wonderful to have you, and I'm so glad that you're able to come on and explain things year after year. I know it's very repetitive, but the Doin' Time show really prides itself on providing a safe environment for First Nation communities and marginalised communities to come and express their grief, but also to look at the positives as well.
Yep. And, I mean, there is a lot of positives in the Mile Creek Memorial.
Yeah.
You know, every year I and a lot of our committee who worked tirelessly throughout the year, you know, travelling from all over, you know, parts of New South Wales, from the ACT and other areas to attend meetings and so forth. But, yeah, I mean, the beauty in the memorial is, you know, the fact that we also get to meet descendants of people that were part of the judicial story of the trial and other families that have sort of, you know, made themselves known. And it just helps that healing process, I suppose, but also in a much bigger way it helps us all see the potential in, you know, truth-telling and what this means for Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal Australians to, you know, to honour the legacy of that and the impact of that within Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities, and how that has created an imbalance that we see through, you know, the Closing the Gap reports that we see every year, but also helps us all understand, I suppose, that the challenges that we you know, that are part of our shared history.
Keith, thank you so much for coming onto the program. It's been great having you.
Thank you.
Are there any final comments you wanted to make?
I just want to thank you for inviting me on. I want to thank all your listeners for tuning in. I look forward to a bigger and better memorial next year. Hopefully the weather will continue to be kind with us, and look forward to that and speaking to you to talk about the amazing program that we'll have locked in for then. And other things that we might be able to announce around that time as well.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot, Keith. Thanks a lot. We'll talk soon. Okay. Bye-bye.
So is he. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. And that was Keith Munro, co-chair of the Mile Creek Committee, from several beautiful lands, one of them being Gomeroi. And, yeah, that was an extended interview with him about the Mile Creek Massacre and honouring all the you know, the survivors of all massacres. So before I go into an announcement, I also wanted to thank everybody that have donated for Radiothon, and in particular for the Doin' Time show specifically. We've actually met our target, and it's really lovely. And once all the donations have been processed, I will read them out on air. And for I wanted to thank all the donors that have chosen to remain anonymous as well, for donating to the show. This show is a very unique broadcast that concentrates primarily on the ongoing genocide of Aboriginal people and also other marginalised communities like asylum seekers and refugees, women in prison, and violations of human rights of all peoples.
Tune in to the Beyond the Bars prison broadcast during NAIDOC Week 2026. Listen to 3CR each weekday at 11 a.m. from Monday the 6th through to Friday the 10th of July. We'll take you inside six Victorian prisons: Dame Phyllis Frost Centre, Barwon Prison, Fulham Correctional Centre, Loddon Prison, Marganite Correctional Centre and Western Plains Correctional Centre. There'll be stories, songs, opinions and poems from the men and women inside while connecting with culture and community. The shows will be live on 3CR 855 on your AM dial, 3CR Digital, and streaming via our website or the Community Radio Plus app. Head to 3cr.org.au/beyondthebars2026 for more information.
This country's black future is a fire. With the right season, that burning school fire.
This story's right. This story's true. I would not tell lies to you, like the promises they did not keep, and how they fenced us in like sheep. Said to us, come take our hand, set us up on mission land, taught us to read, to write and pray. Then they took the children away, took the children away, the children away. Snatched from their mother's breast, said this is for the best, took them away. Welfare and the police came, said you've got to understand. We'll give to them what you can't give. Teach them how to really live. Teach them how to live their self. Humiliated them instead. Taught them that and taught them this. And others taught them prejudice. You took the children away. The children away. Breaking their mother's heart, tearing us all apart, took them away. One dark day on Framlingham, came and didn't give a damn. My mother cried, go get their dad. He came running, frightened. Mother's tears were falling down. Dad shaped up and stood his ground. He said, you touch my kids and you fight me. Then they took us from a family, took us away. They took us away. Snatched from our mother's breast, said this is for the best, took us away. Told us what to do and say. Told
Then they stirred us up again and gave us gifts to ease the pain. Sent us off to foster homes. As we grew up, we felt alone, 'cause we were acting white, yet feeling black. One sweet day, all the children came back.
The children came back. The children came back.
Back where their hearts grow strong, back where they all belong.
The children came back. Said the children came back. The children came back. Back where they understand, back to their mother's land. The children came back.
Back to their mother. Back to their sister. Back to their brother. Back to their people. Back to their land. All the children came back. The children came back. The children came back. Yes, I came back.
And you're listening to the Doing Time Show. You're listening to the Doing Time Show, 3CR. Community radio, and I almost forgot to turn the microphone on. I got so lost in that song, Took the Children Away. It brought a tear to my eye, brings a tear to my eye every time. Archie Roach, so eloquent. The Albanese government rejects majority of major UN human rights reviews recommendations. The Albanese government has rejected most recommendations of a major UN Human Rights Review, including raising the age of criminal responsibility, legislating an Australian Human Rights Act, and policies which will improve the lives of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people and people seeking asylum. On the line we have Arif Hussain, who is the senior lawyer, one of the senior lawyers at the Human Rights Law Centre, and I have invited him onto the show to talk about this very, very important work and media release put out by the Human Rights Law Centre. Hello, Arif, welcome.
Hi, Marisa. Thank you for having me on today.
So lovely to have you, and sorry to keep you waiting. I just could not resist playing all that song.
No problem. It was a great song. I enjoyed listening to it as well.
Took the Children Away by Archie Roach.
Yeah.
Wondering if you could just talk to us about the media release and what's happening. Why has the Albanese government chosen to not protect the rights of First Nations people, children, refugees and others in the community?
Yeah, thanks again, Marisa, for having me on again to talk about this UN process. I think just for your listeners, I think it will be good for me to provide a little bit of a background about this process that Australia went through recently. The process, the UN review process, the Universal Periodic Review process or mechanism, is a UN Human Rights Council review that happens every 4 years. So Australia has gone through this review process three times before. This is the fourth time. It is a state-driven peer review mechanism. What that means is that other 193 nations that make up the UN reviews Australia's human rights record and then makes recommendations to Australia to try to improve its human rights record. So specifically in relation to Australia's recent review, which is the reason why I've been invited to on the show, it examined the extent to which Australia is complying with its international rights obligation that includes under the UN Charter, Universal Declaration on Human Rights, and other international treaties and commitments that Australia has made internationally. So the review, although at the end of the day, there's the other states to decide the type of recommendations and questions put forward to Australia. The review is based on a few pieces of information that is in one piece of it is informed by civil society organizations in Australia. So the three pieces that make up the review from our perspective is Australian government's report, so its take on its international human rights record, information from the Australian Human Rights Commission, other UN entities, and then the NGOs in Australia. So the Human Rights Law Centre coordinated together with our colleagues from Kingsford Legal Centre, Indigenous Peoples Organisation Australia, and Community Legal Centres Australia, Australia's NGO coalition, report to Australia's Universal Periodic Review. We took the opportunity to encourage the Australian government to improve its human rights record consistent with its international obligation. In developing the review, the coordinating committee took a wide-ranging consultation across different NGOs in Australia. At the end of the day, there was around 100 organisations that made up the review. There was probably around 20 or so sections of the our report that focused on and brought attention to the experiences of marginalised groups, including Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, people with disability, women, refugees that you mentioned, and remote communities. Our report that was given to the United Nations as part of this review made about 140 recommendations to improve Australia's human rights record. And the way that it works, once we submitted our review, we submitted our report, it was considered by the UN. We also engaged with other UN nations, so we had bilateral meetings, sent them a lot of emails, told them about our report, told them the recommendations that would improve the human rights condition in Australia. And our main priorities in discussion with those countries that ended up reviewing Australia's human rights record in this universal periodic review was that Australia fully incorporate its international human rights obligation into domestic law through a federal human rights act. We don't do that at the moment. We are the only Western liberal democracy not to have a human rights act. There was a really strong theme in our report and in our advocacy internationally that Australia finally raises the age of criminal responsibility to at least 14 years of age. Other priorities were taking action to address systemic injustices facing First Nations communities through implementation of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People, and obviously ending cruel policies towards people seeking asylum, amongst the other 140 recommendations that civil society organisations made to the UN process. I think what you talked about there, our media release, I'm happy to chat about it, but
sure.
The review actually happened, concluded just a few days ago, and the response from the Australian government was pretty shocking. We are happy to dig into it a little bit.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, so as I said, we prioritise those areas. So we spoke to a lot of countries that would review Australia, and they all get about 2 minutes to make recommendations at the UN to Australia, and they mostly can make about two or three recommendations to Australia. So there was 322 recommendations overall made by, I think it was around 150 or so nations. Australia responded to that, those recommendations made, the 322. So they had a few months to consider them and then to provide a response. and it provided written response. Unfortunately, out of the 322, Australia only accepted 128 of those recommendations made, so that's less than 40%, so to be exact, it's 38%. Based on my memory, this is a lower acceptance rate than the last UPR, which happened in 2021, when the former coalition government accepted 51% of the recommendations. So it is very disappointing, and one of the key asks, as I mentioned, from the civil society organisation in Australia was the high rate of incarceration of Indigenous children in Australia, and the age of criminal responsibility in Australia. And that was a key recommendation that was made by other states to Australia. So that was 27 countries, that's Australia's peers, called on Australia to raise the age of criminal responsibility. And this wasn't the first time. It has been mentioned in Australia's first review, second review, third review, and Australia has not accepted that recommendation. There was also, another thing that I know you're interested in is the Human Rights Act. So there was eight recommendations from states calling for the federal government to enact a National Human Rights Act, and that comes off the back of a parliamentary inquiry recently that found that there are international obligations that Australia has signed up to are not brought home and enacted domestically, and there's piecemeal protections domestically that Australia should enact a Human Rights Act. So that's its own inquiry. The Australian government's own inquiry recommended that, and they haven't responded to their inquiry, but in this process of the UPR, the eight recommendations made by other states to Australia to enact one, they have essentially rejected. They've noted it, but noting in terms of the UPR process is a diplomatic term for rejecting or declining to do the thing. And then on refugees and people seeking asylum, another key area of priority for us as an NGO coalition, there was a lot of recommendations from across the different countries that reviewed Australia. And one of the main recommendations was to end Australia's offshore detention regime. And that's also been rejected. So we will continue to forcibly transfer people to Nauru, and seeking asylum by boat in Australia is essentially not allowed. If you do, then you take into an offshore detention facility. At the moment, it's Nauru. So overall, it's a disappointing, disappointing response from the Australian government. The current government, even in comparison with the previous government, where they accepted maybe, eventually didn't implement a lot of the recommendations, but accepted at the very least, at the starting point, 51%. Here, they have only accepted 38% of the recommendation.
As you've been speaking, I've just been thinking about the fact that it appears that the Australian government doesn't wish to even look at international treaties, does it?
Yeah, so I think that was the main point of the of this process. The international human rights law, multilateralism, these mechanisms are under threat globally. We see what's going on in terms of disregard for human rights internationally in different conflicts that are happening around the world. And during the UPR process, the US, the United States, pulled out of the process entirely. So, the point that we made in our report to the Australian government also, but to the UN and in our report as part of the UPR process was that for these processes, for international law, multilateralism to mean anything, countries like Australia, middle powers, need to take these processes seriously. It can't just be a formality. We can't just be that we turn up every 4 years, do this dance, and then come back again in 4 years' time. This should be taken seriously, and that Australian government should take its international obligations and this mechanism seriously, not just because they're the right thing to do, but because unless countries like ours, Australia, takes this mechanism seriously, they will continue to erode.
Absolutely, and I mean one of the points that I'd like to make as well is that two things actually: Aboriginal deaths in custody. Stopping Aboriginal deaths in custody and all deaths in custody doesn't seem to be considered, and also in regards to the fact that every recommendation has been rejected to end, as you said, mandatory and offshore immigration detention. I mean, it appears to me that human rights violations are allowed to continue in this country. It's so damning.
Yeah, it is a damning report and assessment of Australia's view of its international obligations internationally. I think, in a lot of ways, Australia likes to think that it is, you know, a credible voice internationally on a lot of issues. I think, you know, you often hear that being described as a sensible voice by representatives of the government. But I think if you look at how it responds to human rights issues as it relates to its own conduct, it is damning. And, you know, you're right around incarceration of First Nations people, offshore processing. Those issues were highlighted in our report, and I urge your listeners to download it, read it. It's available on the HRLC website. But we highlighted in that report all those issues that you mentioned, that Australia's asylum system breaches international obligations. It's discriminatory practice because it discriminates based on arrival, and it intercepts and returns people to harm. So it's a clear violation, and it's been found to be by different UN mechanisms apart from this. But Australia continues to spend $13 billion on offshore detention. You know, there's been death, violence, and medical neglect, but we continue to uphold this offshore processing regime. And there was recommendations out of this process that said, you know, this is contrary to Australia's offshore international obligations, and that it should end. And it hasn't ended, and hasn't accepted those recommendations. And I think to your point around Indigenous rights in this country, the main, you know, there's a lot of organisations involved in this UPR process from an Indigenous point of view, and there was contributions made by Indigenous organisations to the report. And one of the main asks by the Indigenous organisations involved in our report, there was other reports as well, that Australia implement its obligations under the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People. I think it endorsed it in 2019, but since then it hasn't done much to implement it domestically. This is an important international declaration on the rights of Indigenous people because it sets out, you know, from the report's perspective, a few key things. And that includes, you know, the covering issues like self-determination, self-governance, land and resource rights, cultural and linguistic preservation, and participation decision-making. So for that not to be, I think, to be taken up by the Australian government is also really disappointing. And I think that is something, self-determination and Indigenous people having a say in decisions that impact them is something that will probably benefit human rights issues across the board that impact Indigenous people.
Indeed, and we're nearing the end of our interview, but also could you just comment on the refusal of the Australian government to accept the long-standing recommendation to raise the minimum age of criminal responsibility from 10?
Yeah, that's a good point. I think, you know, as mentioned, it was a key recommendation made by states to Australia. 27 of them said to Australia, raises the age of criminal responsibility in line with this international obligation to at least 14 years of age. I think in New South Wales it's 12, Queensland 10, NT 10, SA 10, and WA 10 as well. And I think previously, as I said, there was other reviews, three other reviews that made similar recommendations for Australia to raise the criminal age of criminal responsibility to at least 14 years of age. I think this was an opportunity to do that. I think previously the Australian government said that it is an issue for state and territory jurisdiction and government, but we've recently saw that there was advice given by colleagues in the sector to the Australian government that said that it had the power to raise the federal government had the power, the authority to raise the age of criminal responsibility to at least 14 years of age. So we don't really buy that argument that it can't do it because it doesn't have the authority under the Australian Constitution. So it is a point to continue advocating on. I think just because this the Australian government hasn't taken up the recommendations doesn't mean that we shouldn't. We should use the recommendations made to Australia to continue pressuring the Australian government to do the right thing.
Adi, thank you so much for coming onto the program. And of course, we all know that, you know, the Australian government certainly doesn't consult all clans and tribes of Aboriginal people, that it's very narrow. They don't often lived experience is not reflected within Australian government policies. But thank you so much. Where can listeners find more information about this on your website?
Yeah, hrc.org.au, or if you put in any search engine, Human Rights North Centre UPR, you should have a link to the report and our latest media release. If you're interested in the Human Rights Act campaign, it is humanrightsact.org.au. There you can join the campaign for a Human Rights Act at a federal level.
And Edith, you know, you've been on our show a number of times. Can you just tell us your title again?
I'm a senior lawyer at the Human Rights Law Centre.
Thank you so much, Edith, for coming onto the program. Are there any final comments you want to make before you go?
No, thank you very much for having me on, and let's keep the pressure on.
Lovely to have you. Take care.
Take
care. Bye-bye. And that was Adif Hussain from the Human Rights Law Centre. He's a senior lawyer, and he spoke about the Albanese government rejecting most recommendations of a major UN human rights review, including raising the age of criminal responsibility and legislating an Australian Human Rights Act and policies which would improve the lives of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people and people seeking asylum. And I did an extended interview with him because I felt like this was really, really important to look at all that. And we'll just go and have an announcement.
Do you have a few children's picture books or footy boots that your kids have outgrown but want to find them a loving home? Well, drop them in at 3CR and put them in the Books and Boots bin. Books and Boots regularly sends pre-loved children's picture books and sports footwear to remote and regional First Nations communities and children across the country. Contact us at Books and Boots or go to the website www.booksandboots.org.au. We love a good book.
You're listening to the Doin' Time Show 3CR, and it's approximately 4:53. And just wanted to conclude the show by just making a few announcements. Again, thank you to everybody that's donated to the Radiothon. It's not too late to donate. Donate to all shows at 3CR. The Doin' Time Show has met its target, as I said at the beginning. And thank you so much for all our people that have donated. And in fact, I just wanted to acknowledge that we had our 50th birthday celebration for 3CR on Saturday. For people that didn't go, you missed out on a really wonderful event. And there were some really amazing programmers, old and new, that came. And lots of wonderful supporters that actually came to the Collingwood Town Hall where 3CR started broadcasting from 1976. Don't forget, though, that on this show, and probably on other shows too, we will still be digging into archival material and from the archives to have a look at some of the amazing broadcasting and shows that have emerged from 3CR. Now, I wanted to also quickly talk about the Beyond the Bars broadcast dates as part of NAIDOC Week. I'll read them out. These are all prison broadcasts where people go out to the prisons and First Nations prisoners speak and broadcast on the radio. Monday the 6th of July, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m, Dame Phyllis Frost Centre. Oh, that happened today. Tuesday the 7th of July, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m, Barwon Prison, Lara, near Geelong. Wednesday the 8th of July, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m, Western Plains Correctional Centre, Lara, near Geelong. Thursday the 9th of July, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m, Maringeet Correctional Centre, Lara, near Geelong. Friday the 10th of July, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m, Fulham Correctional Centre, near Sale. Friday the 10th of July, 1 p.m. to 3 p.m, and that's Loddon Prison, near Castlemaine. And I wanted to actually read those out because I just felt like it's really important for people to tune in to these prison broadcasts. A lot of hard work goes into producing those shows, and it is a really fantastic chance for Aboriginal people to speak on air and talk about what's happening in prison and to send cheerios out to their loved ones.
You're listening to 3CR, an apartheid-free zone. 3CR's Committee of Management has passed a declaration formalising our commitment to a free Palestine. As an apartheid-free zone, we're committed to boycotting Israel's regime of oppression. We stand firmly against apartheid in Palestine and encourage other organisations to join us in this struggle. Visit our website to read the full declaration and learn more about our commitment to justice and liberation for Palestine and the Apartheid Free Zone movement.
So it's goodbye from Marissa. Until next week, stay tuned every Monday from 4 to 5 for the Do and Time show, and take care of each other and stay safe.
Are you the one who's gonna
3CR, celebrating 50 years.
Did you enjoy listening to that podcast? 3CR is a community radio station, and you, the listener, are a part of that community. Right now, it's our radiothon. We need you to pitch in with a few dollars to keep the station going. We can't do it without you. It's easy. Head to 3cr.org.au/donate. Your donations really matter.